My Dear Fiona by Frances Rosenfeld. Chapter 18, Warrior. The green meadow was quiet. There was a large crowd present, but no one made a sound, standing on the grass in a circle, in the light of the torches, waiting. You are standing in the middle, wearing the white dress with green ribbons, and you have fragrant white flowers and green ribbons in your hair, very thin ribbons which make it look like that of a non-human creature, like an undine or a selkie. Your mentor waits for you by the tallest stone, standing poised for the ceremony, and all your council is in attendance, dressed in festive attire and donning wildflower garlands. Is this your wedding, Fiona? I can't see the groom, they're all women. Some rite of passage, maybe? You walk across the circle of grass with slow ceremonial steps, as if in a trance, your eyes affixed on the top of the tallest stone, perfectly aligned with the moonrise of the solstice. And only then I realize it must be night, but it's still daylight, and although the giant moon already rose above the stone, casting its long shadow towards you, the sun is shining too, casting your shadow towards it. The two shadows met, and you walked inside their joint corridor of darkness, while young girls in white dresses threw flowers at your feet. I always see your hair braided, Fiona, and I didn't realize how long it was. It is let down now, and trails behind you like a train. You walk alone, barefoot on the path of grass and flowers, while the moon rises quickly in the sky, and the sun finally goes to rest, and daylight dims to twilight, but not really darkness, because the moon is so huge and so close it bathes everything in its silver light. Jurun presents you to the makeshift altar covered in flowers and fruit and asks you for your offering, so you kneel in front of it and she cuts a long strand of your flaxen hair, flowers, ribbons and all, with one quick slice of her sword. So close to your face and so fast I feared for your life, Fiona, but you didn't blink. Jurun draped the silver thread of hair over her arms and presented it to the altar, and a slow rumbling started in the silence, murmurs of the people in attendance I thought at first, but soon realized it came from somewhere else, somewhere not here, the voices of the dead. Warrior. She clamored, turning you towards the crowd. But what kind of warrior goes to battle with her chest open, barefoot and wearing flowers in her hair? You have no weapon, Fiona, no shield, no armor? Warrior, Jurun said again, drawing the hair back from your face to allow the latter to gleam in the moonlight. She weaves your tresses in an elaborate braid, with silver thread and green ribbons, and ties its end around your waist, and it looks like a strange extension of your spine. Warrior. She declares for the third time, and you finally react, as if awoken from a sleep. Your shoulders straighten and you jut your jaw forward, defiant. It is not the shiny armor or the fierce weapons that make a warrior, nor is the size of the army behind her. It is the indomitable spirit that stands against all fear, all doubt, all human weakness through sheer strength of will. That's what I saw in your eyes, Fiona. Your face may still look like a child's, but your gaze is sharper and more unbending than a sword, and I pity the fool who'd stand against you in battle. Warrior, you declared yourself with a powerful voice that resonated inside the stone circle. I'm so uneasy right now, used as I was to see you dance and laugh and clap your hands with glee, a careless child. Where did this woman warrior come from? It's as if the moon and the stones raised her from the ground, an older spirit, perhaps, straight from the halls of Odin. Jurun placed her hands on your shoulders, and for a second the two of you were one entity. In a broader understanding of existence, as she passed the indomitable spirit that carried her into battle onto you. Louise, my sister's tentative voice interrupted my daydream. What? Are you okay? You look a little out of it. Yes, of course, I just got distracted, I smiled. Nonsense, she cut me off sharply. What did you see? Tell me. I gave her my best description of the vision, and she listened to the end, without interrupting. So she was a warrior, then? Yes, of course. Most of the women were back then, they fought on an even keel with the men. Why is that weird? I don't know. From what you're telling me, she seems eminently unsuited for military pursuits. Everyone is suited for military pursuits when they don't have a choice. Those were brutal times. She probably got as much training as the boy she grew up with and probably needed it, too. Besides, in the Viking tradition, it would have been strange not to. The lady, the goddess Freyja, ruled over both love and war. What a strange combination, I thought, to be the goddess of beauty, love, magic, death and war at the same time. I shuddered. Do you, see stuff every time you come here? Denise asked. I don't know about every time, there have only been three. Denise paused before she asked the next question, which was unusual for her. Why do you think she chose you? I mean, of all the people related to her by blood, why do you think she chose one who lives 3,000 miles across an ocean? Two, I replied. Two, she nodded and abandoned her quest. Maybe we are the end of the line. So far, Denise started laughing, and the weight on my shoulders melted into her giggles. You know, whatever I find in the records, whatever story I put together for my thesis and back with proof, is going to sound so insincere and soulless against these experiences. I'll feel like an imposter the entire time. Trust me, sister, whoever comes to listen to a dissertation about a Viking princess who may or may not have migrated to the British Isles in the early 10th century probably won't notice. The night dropped quickly, like someone had flipped a switch, and the flower moon bathed the stone circle with its silver light. Oops, Denise said, with the comical face of a kid caught pulling a prank. We should head back, I said, unconvinced. There was so much light I felt maybe we should stay for the sunrise, but Denise was tired and cold, so we made for Stromness, hoping to find accommodations. It was a festival, after all, most public establishments would be open late. The hotel I stayed at the first time had rooms available, and the front desk lady recognized me. I joked about almost spending the night at the Stones, and she turned ghostly pale. That's very irresponsible, miss, especially now, with your sister in your care. Do you not know not to step inside the circle at this time of year? Didn't everyone warn you not to go to the Stones on the night of the summer solstice? She saw in my eyes that the experience I had there had not been altogether normal and shook her head in dismay. You are lucky they let you go. You must have found special grace with them. Who? The Fae. You trespassed their territory, and they let you go. People who step in the circle at the wrong time disappear, never to be seen again. If you love your sister, miss, don't let her do this. Denise caught up with me on the stairs with a sour attitude. She was always cranky when she was tired. What did she say? Nothing. Come on, Ethel, I heard love, sister, and being irresponsible. Did she chew you up for something? I'll tell you tomorrow. Denise was too tired to protest, and she fell asleep as soon as we got to our room. I always wondered where the folk tales about never stepping inside a circle of mushrooms came from, and I guess they made more sense when applied to a spiritual site dedicated to non-human entities. I don't know what to think anymore. It's too much for me, this surreal half-reality where the gaps get filled with things impossible to explain. I went to sleep and had a vivid dream where light beings abandoned themselves to their fiery circled dance in the skies. I woke up to rip-roaring thunder and bursts of lightning flashing through my eyelids.